You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. When many people think about a swan, what probably comes to mind is thoughts of grace, beauty, perhaps even love. These large snow-white birds have long been featured in works of art and literature like the Ugly Duckling or the ballet Swan Lake. But some swan species also have an aggressive side, and they are not afraid to show it. And for some California wildlife officials, they're also an invasive species of swan that pose a growing environmental threat, especially across the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. State lawmakers are working on a bill that could help cut down on their population by allowing hunters and landowners to kill them for free over the next several years. But it's also drawing opposition from animal rights activists, arguing that it's not the swan's fault that they're here. CalMatters digital democracy reporter Ryan Sabalo has been following this legislation and joins us now. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, thank you for having
back. Me. Okay, how did you land on this bill? There are hundreds of bills making its way through the Capitol. What stuck out to you about this legislation?
Well, I'm just interested. I'm a duck hunter myself. I've been, and I'm always interested in wildlife legislation in general. It's not really my beat anymore, but I saw this come through our digital democracy tool that we use to keep track of legislation. And I had a few days to write about it. And so I went out and did a trip out to the Sassoon Marsh, where I got to see dozens and dozens and dozens of these invasive European and Asian mute swans that have invaded the Delta.
Right. So we are not talking about all swans. So what swans are we talking about? Because there are some native swan populations as well.
California has two types of native swans. They're seasonal. They fly here and winter here. And they're the tundra swan and the trumpeter swan. These are not native. These are from Europe and Asia, and they're believed to have come in likely through, I mean, they're gorgeous birds. They weigh 30 pounds, and these are the ones that you see in all the literature and Swan Lake and that sort of thing with the big, graceful neck and the orange bill. And they're different looking than the swans we get here that have more of a black bill and longer, they don't really quite have the same sort of heart shape neck that you sort of see on those ones.
So what is their behavior like, the mute swans that you're focusing on?
Yeah, so these mute swans are, they're resident birds now. So they live in the Delta. And the concern is, so just to put into context, so 4 years ago, they do these big aerial waterfowl surveys every year to keep track of how many birds are here on the landscape. And so they fly over and they can do these counts. So 4 years ago, they found 1,500 of them. This spring, there were 12,000 of them. And from the year before, that population had doubled from around 6,000. So they've seen this exponential growth. And so the challenge with these birds are they eat lots of native vegetation. I think it's something like 8 pounds a day. So they're just pulling this stuff up. And they're also extremely aggressive during the breeding season. Mm-hmm. And they've been known to, I've watched videos of this, like a little duck or something swims up, they'll hop on it and drown it. They've actually killed a kayaker on the East Coast.
Really?
Yeah. So you got to remember these things have a wingspan of 8 feet long and they can fly 30 pounds out of the, you know, off the water. So they're extremely powerful. And they have claws and a very, you know, anything that could pull big chunks of vegetation out of the ground has a very strong bill. And so, they're pose a real challenge for, you know, on the East Coast, when they had them get there on the Chesapeake Bay, apparently they displaced entire colonies of native shorebirds that were trying to nest. The swans would just come in there and muscle them out.
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing is a pretty intimidating force, a wingspan of 6 to 8 feet, 30 pounds. Is this like one of the largest birds in the area?
Yeah. So if you think of your typical Canada goose that you see on a golf course or a park, it might weigh somewhere between 5 and 14 pounds.
Even like a wild turkey in neighborhoods?
Yeah, wild turkeys, it's probably about 10 pounds bigger than the biggest wild turkey you'll see. These are very big birds. And I rolled my sleeves up so you could see. A couple years ago, I went and I went out with some biologists and we did some banding of Canada geese. where you put leg bands on them so that they can be tracked and, you know, and we released them. And just in the process of picking up like 5 to 7 pound Canada geese, I didn't wear long sleeve shirts. I've still got scars from where they scratched me. And so you can imagine the size of a swan that's, you know, potentially 3 times that size, right?
Yeah.
They're very big and they can be very aggressive.
So how did all of this translate into legislation? You mentioned there were around 1,500 swans in 2022. It's now multiplied to, you know, over 12,000. When did this actually get the attention of lawmakers?
So this year, hunting organizations, namely California Waterfowl Association, have sponsored this bill to basically try to give, you know, hunters and landowners the ability to shoot these things without having to worry about getting a permit or permission from the state or, you know, potentially fined by a wildlife officer for shooting one of these things. Right now is technically sort of it's illegal, kind of a gray area. And so far the bill has passed through the assembly without anyone voting against it. And it's pending in the state Senate. It should be up for the suspense file vote in the Appropriations Committee on Friday.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. So there's a gray area in terms of a response. I was curious, what kind of measures could be taken, you know, if this bill didn't become a law to manage this population?
Well, on the East Coast, you know, as some states have been really aggressive and got rid of them. I mean, Maryland had 10, I think, over 10,000 of these things. My numbers, I'm trying to remember. And they've knocked that population down to just a handful. And they did an aggressive campaign of, you know, state wildlife agency people going around and shooting them, euthanizing them, capturing them, euthanizing them when they were flightless during the molting season. They also addled their eggs. New York, where the mute swan actually has a lobby and supporters, got a law passed where the state has to exercise non-lethal measures before trying to kill the swans. And that would be involving things like egg addling, which is where you get into the nest and you destroy the nests, trying to find a wildlife sanctuary or somebody like that that would take a licensed rehab center that would take swans. But their population is still, with all of that, has kind of hovered around 3,000 birds for the last few years.
You mentioned that this cleared the assembly without a nay vote, correct?
That's
correct.
Is there
any organized opposition to this bill in California?
Not yet. I did talk to some mute swan advocates on the East Coast who said they were going to try to persuade lawmakers to kill this one, though.
What is the main argument and message that they want to get across, given that there is, you know, a lobbying effort in other state legislatures across the country?
I mean, their message is that, you know, these are big, beautiful birds that were brought here through no fault of their own, you know, and they shouldn't be treated like vermin. And the idea that hunting might be associated with this is problematic to them.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with CalMatters reporter Ryan Sabolo about a new bill that would allow hunters and landowners to kill invasive mute swans in California. So when talking about invasive species or the debate surrounding non-native species, you can think about feral wild horse populations, feral cat colonies. You reported in this reporting, talked about nutria along the delta, which are also a threat to the environment as well.
Yeah, and the nutria, which are these 20-pound swamp rodents with these big, ugly orange teeth that are native to South America, there isn't a lobby trying to protect mute swans. And the state has spent $16 million trying to kill these things. And they've killed off, I think, 6,000 of them already. And they're very similar in terms of the damage that they cause. You know, they're voracious feeders of native plants. Nutria are also particularly troubling because they dig holes in flood control levees and things like that. So, as I reported in the story, charisma really matters when it comes to invasive species. You know, nobody said anything about killing nutria. And, you know, the hunting organizations are, in effect, saying, why don't you just let us do this for free, right, instead of paying a bunch of taxpayer money to do this? But because swans are so beautiful, you know, you run into these sort of philosophical debates about protecting things that are pretty. I use the example in my story of, you know, you're apt to get death threats at even suggesting killing off a non-native feral cat colony, but nobody's going to say a word about killing off rats, which are non-native species, in the same habitats, right? And I spoke with this biologist who specialized in non-native zebra mussels, and he talked about how nobody has ever stood up for the non-native zebra mussels and said these are gorgeous species that we should protect. And, you know, and so charisma really does matter in these debates.
But in this case, there wasn't a nay vote in the assembly. It's overwhelmingly like a Democratic majority in the state legislature. Is that surprising, given that there isn't even organized opposition to this bill?
Yeah, for now, it was sort of surprising. I was surprised to see that. But, you know, I've been noticing that when it comes to nutria eradication and things like that, there hasn't really been that much pushback for things like that. So long as they made sure to use trapping that the animal welfare advocates supported, you know, the more humane traps and things like that. So we'll see. I'm not sure how this is going to go.
And you physically went out there, you know, and saw the swans in action. Can you help us visualize? I mean, you did by talking about, you know, the destruction they can cause to, you know, to vegetation. I guess, what would be the potential long-term consequences if this population continued to grow?
Well, I mean, just the exponential growth curve that we're seeing right now, if that continues on this pace, one of the things they talk about in invasive species management is there's like a point of no return, right? They want to try to stop. So kind of goes like this. You want to stop the invasive species from getting here in the first place, which they tried, right? They said that, you know, in 2008, they actually made it illegal to import these swans into the state without a special permit. People still brought them in. So they tried.
Why do people bring in these swans if we already have native swans?
Well, I mean, they're so pretty, and they would. I mean, they'd look lovely on a backyard estate's pond or something, right? And they also chase off Canada geese, so people were kicking them out and throwing them onto their golf courses or wherever they were doing this, and they didn't do the responsible thing and clip their wings, which, if you think about trying to grab a swan big enough to swamp a kayaker. That's not an easy prospect. And so the birds, I mean, these birds can fly. So they just flew over to the nearby marshlands and started breeding. So, but to get back to the point of, you know, the idea of there's a point of no return, once a population gets so big, you're in sort of this crisis all the time management phase where they believe they're at the point now where they could knock the population back to a much more manageable mm-hmm. or get rid of all of them. Which I think is what some of the people who have a stake in the Delta would like to see.
Yeah, and I know that there's like a bill right now working its way through the Capitol, but when it comes to other state agencies like California Fish and Wildlife, I mean, what are their thoughts on swans?
I spoke with the state's waterfowl coordinator, and I mean, she doesn't see them any differently than nutria, right? I mean, to her, they represent a major threat to the state's birds and wildlife, and she'd like to see them gone.
Are there any other non-lethal measures that could be taken when talking with experts about controlling this population?
I mean, you could try egg addling and doing that sort of thing. You could try doing what New York did and trying to authorize them to go to sanctuaries or wildlife rehab centers or things like that. But you run into the same sort of challenge in those cases too, right? Like how many of those facilities are available? How many places would actually take these swans? And then you run into the issue of having someone who, like I said, with the cuts on my arms, the biologists didn't get cuts on their arms, right?
Well, they know better.
they know how to handle them and things like that, right? So, you know, trying to make sure that they don't just fly off and go back to a marsh somewhere, you know, is a real challenge.
Given that there's only a couple weeks left to session and then the governor has, you know, about a month to sign whatever bills are passed into law or veto them. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you think the likelihood is that this could be signed into law?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know what's going to happen with this one. Like I said, there's been no opposition so far, but, you know, because of the story and my reporting, I think the East Coast folks who support the swans are aware of this now, so we'll see.
Yeah, what response have you received from your reporting?
Not much. Just, you know, it's an people are passionate about wildlife and invasive species.
Yeah. So. I guess what's the big takeaway for you? I mean, you have personal experience as a hunter and working in the environment. You're now covering the state capitol. This isn't the only invasive species we're talking about. We just had a conversation earlier this week about golden mussels. Yeah. So there's a constant threat in a conversation about controlling populations. I guess what is a big takeaway you have about how that's being managed and discussed in California?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to charisma. I mean, some species get a pass because they're attractive or we have some sort of emotional attachment to them. And then others, people don't mind if we kill them all off. And I mean, and it's a remarkable thing to think about just how much invasive species, if you start looking at plant communities around the state, I mean, things like star thistle and everything, our ecosystems are very much out of whack. And so when you start thinking about how much wetlands have been lost in California, you know, 90% of California's wetlands have been lost through urban development and agriculture. And so these are really, really extremely precious ecosystems that we have. And I think the state and the hunting community biologists and things would say, you know, adding one more stressor onto these few remaining ecosystems is a big, you know, they're kind of teetering on the edge and we don't have very many of them as it is. So, you know, I think they would like to see them gone.
Yeah. Well, some would blame it squarely on humans.
Yes.
for dwindling wetlands.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, we've got to save what we have left.
Ryan, thank you so much. It was really an interesting bill.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Ryan Sabalo is CalMatters digital democracy reporter, and we've been talking about the threat of invasive mute swans to California's native species and a new bill that would allow hunters and landowners to kill them for the next several years as population control. It's currently making its way through the state capitol. Still ahead, stories about bullies and the impact that they have on our lives. We'll meet two of the featured performers at this month's In a Nutshell Storytelling Showcase. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.